material from last week is just kind of was introductory. What we're doing this week is also introductory, but you know, the word introduction sometimes makes it sound like you could skip that, but I don't think that's right at all. What we're really trying to understand is what it means to do inquiry in TSK, and everything turns on that. There's no wrong way to do inquiry, but there are ways that are less rich, let's say. And you really want to be able to ask questions in a wide variety of ways. Experience is so determined. We accept so many different limits and so many different facts that we take for granted that you can start questioning in one area very quickly you could go into another area and somebody else might be going into completely other questions. There's so much to look at because we've got this, it's like a tapestry. I think at one point Rinpoche uses that image, although not quite in that context. Things are woven together and interwoven so richly and tightly that any kind of question can lead to any other kind of question. And it's when that sense of questioning wakes up for you, I think that's when TSK really comes alive. The whole question about, you know, what's the benefit of doing TSK inquiry, we'll look at that a little bit today. But in one way, the answer is you need to kind of drop that. What is, I think in the When It Rains selection, it talks about an improvement orientation. And we don't really benefit from that because when you're trying to improve your situation or your circumstance, you're already buying into, you're already accepting a whole lot of assumptions. And you have an idea in mind about what it would mean to improve. It's better to be just kind of drop those ideas. On the other hand, it is important to have a motivation, and that gets talked about in the When It Rains reading for this week. And I think it's actually important. Let me take a look here. On page 15 of the When It Rains reading, it says, well, I don't find it right. Oh, here it is, the bottom of 15, the last paragraph. It says, it would be a good idea to reflect on your own motivation for working with this study program. Without a motive that keeps you going, sooner or later you will lose interest in asking questions. Is it the sheer pleasure in seeing things in new ways? Is it because you are looking for something in particular? These are questions only you can answer. And I actually would like to make that a writing assignment for those of you in the teacher training program. Can you write a paragraph or two? What is your motivation for taking this program? And I think by tomorrow, I'm going to try to set up a space on the website where people can post these writing assignments. Now, anybody is welcome to write on that topic, but people who are in the training program, that's an assignment. So just a couple of paragraphs. What are your motivations for taking this program? And let's look for a moment at the first motivation that's mentioned, which is the sheer joy of asking questions. Or how does it, I might say it that way, is the sheer pleasure in seeing things in new ways. That has so much to do with what TSK offers. In the second paragraph of the reading from When It Rains, it says, okay, consider this introduction an opportunity to reorient your thinking and to begin looking at your ordinary experience in light of the possibility that it might all happen very differently. That's such a rich invitation, and it's very much what TSK is about. When people talk about the benefits of TSK, they say a lot of things. I'm not going to try to speak for everybody, but one of the themes that comes up very often is a sense of the world coming alive again. Our overall theme for this program is activating the vision, activating the TSK vision, and activating and bringing alive. Those two are very closely related. It's you bring the vision alive, and then your own life comes alive. We spend a lot of our time going through routines, going through what's already been established, thinking that we know how things are, thinking that we know what's possible and not possible. And in TSK, all of that gets called into question. And that is the heart of what we're doing. So this idea of the possibility that it might all happen very differently. And when that's the case, then everything feels kind of fresh and alive, like, you know, the way the grass smells after a rain, that it, somehow it smells very alive. You know? Or the way you feel when maybe you've arrived in a foreign country and you step outside after you've gotten things sorted out, and everything just feels different. It's all kind of an adventure. That quality of it being an adventure, that's what TSK is about. So that's a suggested answer to the question of what's your motivation. But obviously, you know, reflect on that for yourself. What is your motivation for taking the program? And maybe it's some kind of external motivation. You know, somebody asked me to, and I didn't want to disappoint them. That's a possibility. David and Michael are commenting, which is great. I encourage you to comment as we talk, either by voice or in the chat box. David said, life is practice, practice is life. That's exactly right. The opportunity for exploration is there all the time. So the word practice is kind of a funny word, because sometimes it makes it sound like, you know, drudgery. We practice until we get it right. That's not what this means at all. It means that you are always engaging the vision. A friend of mine who used to practice TSK and still does a lot of very similar things used to describe this by saying life is a laboratory. So you're always experimenting. You're always asking yourself, what's going on? What if I change things a little bit? And in a few minutes, I want to do the practice of expanding, which some of you have already been working with. And we can say a little bit more about that. Michael says here, until starting this new class, I had not realized that inquiry was quite so central. I had imagined that there were several ways to initiate a new way of looking, of entering a new vision, appreciation, gratitude, acceptance, a new delight in the flying moment, discovering that we are not flightless birds, but had strong wings all along. Yeah, that's great, Michael. And I don't think that the TSK texts, that what Rinpoche writes, means to limit what inquiry is. I would say that all of the things that you mentioned, appreciation, gratitude, acceptance, delight in the moment, those are all forms of inquiry. Maybe it doesn't sound that way, or maybe it feels like that's stretching the word a little bit too far. And I don't think it's necessary to insist on that. But inquiry certainly doesn't mean only. Certainly it doesn't mean just asking a question in words. It means looking at your experience. And so let's take that a little further, because you raise a really good point. So the quality of gratitude, to take that as an example, is that a kind of an inquiry? I would say that it is, in the sense, now sometimes gratitude arises spontaneously, and that's fine. But you might say to yourself, what if I let myself feel gratitude for the experience that I'm having right now, for the possibility of experience? Or what if I let myself appreciate, to use another of the words you mentioned, the richness of experience as it presents itself to me right now, or let myself appreciate the capacity I have for knowing. The what if quality, I suppose, is the appreciation, is the inquiry element in that. The possibility is always there for more, for something richer. So, with that in mind, maybe this is a good moment to go into the practice. Very often, in these online sessions, what happens is that we talk and mostly I talk. People ask some questions. We have a little bit of discussion, and then at a certain point, and it's always toward the end, I say, okay, so let's do a short practice, and then that stimulates another round of discussion. But today I thought I'd introduce the practice a little earlier. And the practice that I want to do is this practice of expanding and condensing, which is on pages 21 and 22 of the When It Rains book. And what I want to do actually is just focus on expanding. I think I said that last week also. So expanding, again, is a kind of inquiry. It's a way of calling into question the way things are. And you call them into question, not by asking. So you'd say, well, here I am in this room at this moment, and suppose that I wanted to expand my sense of time, the time that I'm inhabiting. So it's not just this moment, but in a larger sense of where I am in my life. That would be one way of expanding. And the reason that that's a form of inquiry is that it's asking us to go beyond what we ordinarily do. So expanding is actually really just as good a word as inquiry for the general point here. I mean, we haven't talked about condensing yet, and we'll get to that another time. But expanding is the sense of expanding possibilities, or taking a more expansive view of our situation, and appreciation and gratitude and acceptance. Those are all ways of expanding, because we don't normally engage our experience in that way. So the general point about expanding that I think is helpful is to understand or reflect on what it means to expand something. One of the things we have to really realize is that expanding is what we would normally call a metaphor. We'd say, well, of course, when you expand something, you're talking about a physical operation. Something was smaller, and now it expands, or somehow you find a way to expand it. Any other use of the term expand, we say, well, we don't usually think about it. But if we think about it, we may say, well, that's just a metaphorical use, in the same way that you can expand something physically. Let's say a gas expands when it's heated. there are elements of your experience that you can expand. So the general point that I think is important here is that metaphors are real. they're not necessarily real in the same way. You know, if a gas expands, that's one thing. And if my sense of time expands, that's another thing. But there is nothing less real about expanding your sense of time. The metaphorical use of a term is no different from the from a physical use. And you know, words, every word in a sense is a metaphor. And this, if this seems, you know, if that seems confusing or if you have doubts about it, it's not so important. I'm just trying to make a point here. Whenever we put something in words, it's not the experience. And a metaphor is a way of taking the experience. And of course, last week we questioned the word experience, but I'm going to keep using it. A metaphor is a way of taking the experience, or a word is a way of taking the experience, or a sentence, and transporting it, which is what the word metaphor really means in the Greek. It means to carry across, to ferry across, like going across a river. Metaphors take experience into the realm of language. And in that sense, every word is a metaphor. And a word like expand is a metaphor. And a word like appreciation or gratitude is a metaphor. It's, as I say, you know, maybe I'm taking it a little bit too far in saying that, because we don't really understand what the word appreciate. Appreciate really means to grow, right? Like you put money in a bank and it earns a tiny, tiny little bit of interest, and so its value appreciates. Right? So appreciation is a kind of a growing, and that's a metaphor. All of our language, just about, if we look at it, has that quality. So expanding is just an example of that. Expanding is a way of taking our ordinary experience and calling it into question. And that's, you know, TSK inquiry is a way of calling things into question. It doesn't mean that you have to ask a particular question in words. It means that the possibility for richer experience is there. So expanding experience is like that. Expanding experience and the instructions in When It Rains are pretty good about that. It can happen in any dimension. I've used the example of time just now. Michael says here, and I think this is right, if I understand correctly, because it's a terse comment, he says expanding experience. So that's right. You expand experience, all kinds of experience, but I take you to be saying, Michael, expanding the idea of experience, expanding what it means to experience. And that's another way of thinking about all the possibilities that are open up at any time. So when we do this practice of expanding, it's almost the range of what you could expand is endless, is infinite. You might expand your sensory experience. You might expand what you're feeling right now. You might expand your sense of space, your sense of being located in space or in time. You might expand your sense of being a self, if you can contact that sense. I think it's helpful to stay with something you're in touch with. You get in touch with it. And it may just be seeing across the room and seeing something. And if you try to expand, let's say you see a clock sitting on the desk. And if you try to expand the clock, well, that's a visualization, basically. You kind of imagine that the clock gets bigger and bigger and bigger. That's okay. Or you might try to expand your sense of seeing the clock. Or you might try to expand your relationship to the time that the clock is announcing or pronouncing. And those are, that's just the tiniest little set of possibilities for expanding. So what I'd like us to do now is take a couple of minutes and just try expanding some aspect of what's going on for you right now. And you know, look at that as a kind of inquiry. Look, do the practice with the sense that, that what you're doing is calling into question or opening up in unexpected ways. So let's try that for a couple of minutes. Okay, so let's come together again. You know, one of the things that strikes me is that it's interesting to even to see when you stop that quality of expanding, you kind of fall back into the regular, the ordinary. Just that difference is something worth looking at. So here's an opportunity to comment a little about your experience, share something with people about what you noticed or discovered. And those of you who are calling in by phone, I'm not quite sure how the muting process works, but I assume you can unmute yourself. And those of you who are online, there's the chat box or you can speak up. So Kathleen is giving instructions. You have to unmute if you want to speak. What's not clear to me is what people do on the phone, but Kathleen, I'm sure you've explained that to people. So David has a comment here. That was somebody speaking. Unfortunately, I can't understand them. Yeah, whoever that is breaking up. Okay, whoever that was breaking up. Nope. 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 I see that it seems to be Eliana, but what I hear is a kind of a low voice that is not intelligible. So maybe we'll have to try that again. Okay. Let's go to David's comment here in the chat box. The easiest expansion for me is to open my narrow focus. Well, right. The opposite of expanded, I suppose, is narrow or contracted. You know, when we talk about condensed, the reading makes the point that condensed is not the same as contracted. It doesn't mean smaller. So yes, we ordinarily have a kind of a narrow focus. My concerns, my interests, my usual way of being here, being in my own experience, that's the narrow. So David writes, the easiest expansion for me is to open my narrow focus. I do that by allowing myself to be aware of all my sense fields and what is arising. Immediately sound, touch, taste, seeing spaces open like sails in the wind to catch and flutter. Consciousness embodies all these activities. A fullness becomes immediately noticeable. So that's very nice. Certainly expanding the senses is a really positive way to do this. One of the questions we want to look at, and this goes back to Michael's earlier comment, one of the points that's made in When It Rains, and by the way, I'm focusing a lot on When It Rains, even though I'd said that we would look mostly at dynamics this week, but it's because the When It Rains section, it's pretty long this week, much longer than it's going to be any other time. And it lays out some of these fundamental considerations. So going back to When It Rains, one of the points that's made in that reading it's in the context of saying, you know, because we're committed to questioning, because we're committed to inquiry, to opening, to expanding, those are all pretty much synonyms. Because we're committed to that, we also have the opportunity to question the vision itself. We can question, one thing we can do is say, well, what the heck does that mean? You know, we can question the vision in that sense. But we can also question, well, what does it really mean? So in a way, Michael's comment about inquiry, is inquiry really more central than appreciation or gratitude or other ways of opening experience? That's a kind of a questioning of the vision. It's very fruitful. So on page 16 of When It Rains, it says, we can apply inquiry to the vision itself. Nothing is out of bounds. So then he says we can question what had just been quoted. And the quote is this. So maybe this is the central idea. This is from Visions of Knowledge, and it's right at the beginning of the reading from Visions of Knowledge for this week. It says, no matter what form they take, questions evoke knowledge. We can foster this knowledge dynamic by expanding the inquiry. So we have the clear connection between inquiry and expansion, feeding questions into questions, asking with the heart, the senses, and the body, as well as the mind. And I think that's a wonderful phrase and a wonderful phrase to question. How is it that we can question with the heart, the senses, and the body? And David has just given an example, expansion, which is itself really, I would say, a kind of inquiry. One way to do that is by expanding the senses. So, you know, a lot of you have experience with Kumye, or if you don't have experience with Kumye, you may have experience with yoga, or some other body discipline. And it seems to me very accurate to say that a discipline like that is a way of expanding your experience. You might also say condensing your experience, and that's an interesting way to start to think about what is meant by condensing. But right now we're focused on expanding. So that kind of body-centered practice expands your experience into areas, dimensions that you are not usually aware of. And so that would be expanding, or rather questioning, with the senses and the body. The difference, I suppose, or what's being added in TSK is that you're expanding you expand your experience, and that expanding is a kind of questioning. So it's not just that you enjoy the sense of a deeper, richer experience. That's true. And that's a part of what's going on. But it's also the case that you say, well, you don't have to ask this question in words, of course, but you're asking, what's my experience really like? And we say, oh, look, it has this whole dimension that I'm not usually aware of. And that in itself is a part of the adventure of knowing. You know, when you expand your experience or deepen your experience or question with the heart and the senses and the body, you're opening up. It's part of this adventure, and there's new knowledge that's available. And it's a knowledge that's available in time and in space, because that's where experience happens. The richness is so, you know, it's so rewarding. So let's go on to some other comments. Michael wrote, so it's just a side comment, I guess you could say. So many words start with X, so we have expand, right? Expand, experience, ex-wife, extemporaneous. Yeah, so what does X mean? It means coming out of, right? Like exit. And there's another interesting word to think about in that connection, which is ecstatic. The word ecstatic literally means, so static has to do with what doesn't change, right? It's the background that doesn't change. Things are static. Ecstatic is you move out of the way things are. You move out of where you're ordinarily standing. You move out of the way things ordinarily are. And so expansion is ecstatic. And I don't mean that, you know, to start with, I just mean expansion means that you are expanding, you are stepping outside the range of what's ordinary. And then, of course, what the word ecstatic then suggests is that perhaps that really is a very positive experience, a very joyful experience. Because, you know, as long as we're in the range, as long as we're within the range of what we ordinarily experience, it's limiting. You know, I mean, you may say, well, gee, my ordinary experience is just fine. And it is. It absolutely is. Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Okay. I think I understand your point. And I like the idea of imperience. We'll have to figure out how to use that in a sentence. but in my experience, yeah, okay, I like that. I don't think the term here, maybe the way to say this is what I was just saying about ecstatic. You know, the idea is not that you take a stand outside. The idea is that you step outside your usual stand. And maybe that stepping out is a stepping out into. So maybe you could say that experience is an imperiencing an impending. It's absolutely true that you are, you know, where you're moving into richness. The suggestion for expanding is a moving into richness. But I think your point is good, you know, and it's a good example of how our language is always limiting. You know, I said before that all words are metaphors, and every metaphor is helpful in taking us beyond what we ordinarily experience or what we've experienced, but it's also problematic because it commits us to a particular mode. So yes, I like that. Maybe that's a good way of thinking about why condensing is the natural complement to expanding. But let's see. Maybe people would like to start playing with the words imperience and impending. I just like that. It's good. Let's take a look at what some other people have to say. So Brigitte says, I did the practice kind of playfully. That's absolutely good, by the way. These practices are meant to be done playfully. Expanding an object on a photograph, a stupa and all its surrounding. So a photograph of, you were expanding the photograph, if I understand correctly, and it was a photograph of a stupa and its surroundings. It absorbed me then. Then the sound that I heard doubling, repeating, faster, created another space. All in all, it was refreshing and brightening everything up, enrichering. There's another nice new word. I like that very much. Normally we'd say enriching, but this is, it's not just enriching. It's better than that. It's richer. It's enrichering. Great. You know, anything, I mean, you know, the point you make here about kind of catching you or absorbing you and then creating another space. Expansion, I think, is meant to have that sense of creating a space. We looked at a reading in the course we did last summer. We looked at a reading about expanding, which is way too complicated to get into now. But I will just point toward the notion that the expansion of space. You know, that when we in astronomy or cosmology, we say the universe was created. There was this big bang, and then in the tiniest part of a second, everything expanded dramatically. And in that expanding, the universe comes into being. So this range of possibilities that opens up, I think that's really important, this enrichering that we can encounter. Okay, Remco writes, there seems to be a connection between the willingness to stop the exercise, although I'm touching a fullness doing the exercise, and a hope, a motivation for something even more than fullness. Well, okay, that's interesting. So one of the things that comes up for you in your experience is a willingness, is it a wish also to stop the exercise, or is it just being willing, even though it's giving you a sense of fullness? And then a motivation. So is that a wish, a motivation or a hope, you say, for something even more than fullness? Okay, so one of the ways in which you can use expanding, and it's just one approach, but one of the ways in which you can use expanding is you have this experience and there's a fullness, and then there's a hope for something even more than fullness. And that's a reaction. You know, we have an experience and we react to experience. That's typically what we do. But you can expand the reaction too. So you can expand the hope or the wish or the sense that there might be something more than fullness. What happens if you expand that? Where does it take you? Maybe it takes you back to the beginning. Maybe I'm just making things up. Maybe I don't know where it takes you. Expansion is just one nice possibility. I think one reason it's useful at the beginning of a program like this is it's easy for people to see, you know, here's what we ordinarily have, and then we can expand it. And TSK is also about expanding. So, Remco, if you're writing something on this question of what's your motivation for doing TSK, you know, maybe that is a place to reflect on this, something even more than fullness. What could that be? Or what's so great about fullness? Maybe it's natural to go beyond that. Okay, I want in the couple of minutes we have left, let me just quote something. And I decided last week I said maybe I wasn't going to be writing orientations because it seems as though When It Rains already offers an orientation. But I think I probably will write something leading into each section, so we'll have a place on the website for that. Maybe it'll be short. One of the things that I want to do this time in that section is put up a quote, and I'm going to mention this quote right now, or go into it just a little bit. It's from one of the readings that's in When It Rains for this unit, but it's not one of the assigned readings for the course because we had to eliminate some readings. But I liked it very much. It's from page Roman numeral 18 of Knowledge of Time and Space. And it says, it's basically talking about TSK inquiry, even though that's not the language it uses. It says, the mind has many patterned ways to prevent that kind of inquiry from arising. So this is something to look at. You know, what keeps the adventure from getting underway, the adventure of knowing or the adventure of being? What keeps us at home instead of setting out on the adventure? So the mind has many patterned ways to prevent this kind of inquiry. Boredom, easy distraction, bemused reflection. Some of you for whom English is not your native language may not know the word bemused. It means something a little bit like distance, not quite involved. Bemused reflection or a steady stream of conceptual insights. And notice how easy it is to kind of, in a way, get tricked, you could say. I mean, if you're bored, you say, oh, this exercise is no good, or I don't know how to use it, that's another possibility. That kind of reaction really shouldn't ever be a stopping point, because you can always go on and do more with the practice. Distraction is the same kind of thing. Distraction is a way of, you know, maybe bouncing off your experience if for some reason, whatever reason, you don't want to get into your experience. Conceptual insights, you know, it may seem like you're really learning something valuable when you have a conceptual insight, and it may be that you are. But when it gets conceptualized, unless you're alive to the activity of conceptualizing, the kind of dynamic of thinking and insight, unless that's operating, the insight itself seals things up. You know, that's what thoughts do. They take the experience and they put a label on it, and now you set it aside. That's pretty much how it works. So those are all possibilities that are mentioned. And then maybe I'll take one more sentence, and there are four sentences in this paragraph. We won't get to the last two, but I will post it. The second sentence says, relying exclusively on words and thoughts, judging in terms of previous understandings, accepting uncritically beliefs proffered that's offered by others, turning inquiry into game playing, rejecting rigor and precision in the name of direct experience. All these approaches only further habitual and frustrating ways of knowing and being. So let me just say something quickly about the last example that's given here, because it's kind of an ongoing issue for a lot of people. So the quote says, rejecting rigor and precision in the name of direct experience. So we might say, I don't want to analyze. I don't want to get caught in words and thoughts and concepts. For me, what matters is direct experience. And when you say that, it's fine. There's some truth in that. There is truth in that. But at the same time, if you just fall into direct experience and you leave out rigor and precision, you're losing something. So what does that mean, rigor and precision? It doesn't mean that you have to have some theory that's guiding you. It doesn't mean that you've worked out in advance what you're going to do. Rigor and precision, I think, in TSK means something very different and maybe hard to put into words, but let me just say it this way. The rigor and precision that's being called for here is a kind of commitment to inquiry, a kind of a commitment to always opening up. There's a kind of a discipline in that. And that's close enough, I think, for now, to what counts as rigor and precision. So we'll look at that. We're still exploring all this. We have some time to explore it, and there'll be more opportunities. Now, so there is that assignment, which I will repeat in the little comment that I'll put up, the writing assignment. You can work with expanding as you're walking around practice. And then it'd be a good idea, if you haven't done so already, to start looking at exercise 24 in the first TSK book, the marriage of sound and breath exercise. That's an exercise that has to do with experience and with not relying on words and concepts, not judging in terms of previous understanding. So in a way, the question to ask, given what we've just been talking about, is how can you do that practice, which is so experientially focused, with rigor and precision? Okay, let's stop there. Thank you very much, everybody. Talk to you next week.